Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And here we are once again for another instalment. One day later than usual because of the bank holiday weekend. But here we are. I'm in my TMO shipping container in one part of South Manchester to another TMO shipping container in another part of South Manchester. JB.
Hello, Tim. Actually, my shipping container has been moved about 100 miles to Barnard Castle.
And to a TMO shipping container in the leafy Cheshire suburbs where there's lots of garden space and garage, but no cafes and bars that are shut for the time being. Phil Largan.
Hello. I'm only about maybe 2 miles, maybe not even that, as the crow flies from your shipping container, or certainly yours, Tim, not JB's, that's been transported.
A couple of miles, but it's a different world.
It is a different world. We get gardens.
Have you ventured out over the bank holiday, Tim? Have you been anywhere?
No, I've not been anywhere. I've virtually been around. Where did I go? I've been cycling. I did a race around London.
Did you really?
Nice.
Did you win?
Yeah. No, it was like 300 people. I came about 43rd, something like that, in my category. I'm doing all right. I'm quite enjoying it. But no, I've been nowhere. How about you? How's Barnard Castle?
Barnard Castle's very, very good. But before I went there, I wandered around the fine town of Chorlton. And things are starting to open up. There were two or three pubs open, but selling beer sort of through the window. As Greta Thunberg would say, nature is healing.
You sure she wouldn't? Are you sure she wouldn't say, "How dare you"?
She might say that also. But yeah, it's really good to see. There's a lot of people in the sun, responsibly in the sun. And finally, some people could have some beers, which is great.
No, I tell a lie. I went to, I had a little jog with the kids around the park earlier, and it was, and I did come back thinking that's the most normal I've felt in a long time, just because the park was full of people being responsible, but it was full of people having a picnic, playing tennis, playing football, buying ice creams from an ice cream van, and it just felt really normal. I'm sure there's plenty of people that will sneer and say, everyone's being irresponsible, but it didn't look like it to me. It was really nice. Yeah. How was your weekend, Phil?
Good weekend overall. It was my birthday on Friday.
Of course.
Thank you, gents. Which unfortunately meant I had my 5K challenge to attempt.
Sub 20.
Sub 20 was the challenge. And about, when was it? About 3 weeks ago, I kind of went for it, but not. I didn't 100% commit, and I got 20 minutes and 2 seconds. And then on Tuesday of this week, I went for it, knowing that if I failed, I had one more attempt in me on Friday. And on Tuesday, I tried to run every kilometer at 4 minute pace, and then with the intention of, if I just speed up the last one or two by a few seconds, I'll sneak under. And I did it. I tried kicking at the end and I just had nothing left. And I hit it 20 minutes dead, which meant I had 2 days of rest and stretching and foam rolling before a final attempt on Friday on my birthday. And I went off hard, really hard, probably too hard, and did like a 3:30 opening kilometer and then had 4 kilometers of just in absolute agony trying to hold on and hold on and hold on, and managed a 19.09.
So what? That's outrageous.
So unbelievably managed to do it. So delighted.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, it was good. is very good. I've earned my birthday cake and barbecues and beers over the weekend.
That's ridiculous, Phil.
Yeah, that's my weekend of fun.
See, that atrophy of your muscles through lockdown has been a good thing, hasn't it? You've got more of a runner's physique now.
Oh, no, don't say that, Tim. That's what I want to avoid.
Well, I mean, one of the things that rugby players will be wanting to avoid is a bit of atrophy. And as a result, they need a bit of time to train. Apparently, 4 to 6 weeks of full-on training before they are ready to play elite-level rugby again. But it looks like the starting gun on that might be able to start very, very soon.
Yeah, so the government, it was midnight last night, I think I'm right in saying, midnight on Sunday night of a bank holiday, the government published its stage two release from COVID for elite athletes. So I've flicked through the document. It's not the most interesting document in the world. There's a lot of precautionary advice, a lot of risk assessment type advice, a lot of having the processes in place to ensure that everything is clean. But it does say once you've followed stage one and got the right preparations of stage two in place, you can start initially with groups of 2 to 3 players for contact training, including sparring and tackling and other stuff, with then the intention to build up. And the guideline says build up to between 4 and 12 people. But if you've got 12 people, I don't see why you can't have 15 people or even say 16 people to do scrums or lineups or something like that. But it's overall, it's good. It's starting to get back.
You can't even play a game of rugby league with 12.
12. Just assume that one man's in the bin.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah.
But you can't even play sevens actually with 12.
Oh, yeah, of course, because it's like not 13, is it? It'd be 26. Yeah,
26.
I wonder if it's working the same way, excuse me, that it works in schools where they have like, they call them bubbles, where they have groups of 10 to 15 kids, but it's the same 10 to 15 kids. So if one of them gets it, there's a limit to who they can spread their infection to within that one group.
Yeah.
And if you had to be in a group with two other rugby players, you've got to think about this. When you're doing that pre-season training, there's times when you might have to do contact and you're like, I don't want one of those massive lads. But then on the flip side, the times you do fitness out on the field, it's like, no, I want the fat lads.
And there's always...
Haven't Quinn solved this with their clique system?
There's always the problem as well. Like you can get... When you're doing wrestling drills, like if you're doing fitness, then wrestling, or like running, then wrestling, there's always the problem that there's a few lads who always take it too seriously. Yeah. You're always kind of hoping the coaches are watching or always trying to get one up. Whereas if you get the right person, the right partner, you can basically use the wrestling as a bit of a breather.
Oh,
if you
I'm get the wrong part. So I'm the other way around. I take my wrestling very seriously. I use the running as a breather. I don't want to lose the wrestling.
Was it Michael Jordan in The Last Dance? But one, or it might have been Rodman. I can't remember who it was. But one of them, when they're doing a running drill and you have to run from the back to the front. Rodman.
Yeah,
it was Rodman. You have to run from the back to the front. This is after Rodman got back from Vegas. You have to run from the back to the front. So most players go, right, take it easy at the front to give each other an easy time of it. And Rodman, no, sod that. I'm off. Come catch me.
Was it nobody told him?
No. I think it's just he was making a point that, yeah, I've been out for a massive party, but I can still bring it.
No, the story was, and I might be wrong with this, but I don't think I am because I'm so certain of it. And when I'm certain of things, it means I'm never wrong, right? I thought the story was, Rodman goes to Vegas. So Phil Jackson says he's going to come back. He's going to need some conditioning in a pre-season. So he makes the whole team do a pre-season. Jordan says, well, I'm not doing a bloody pre-season. And then tells all the boys to walk. But no one told Rodman, which is why he went round and round and round.
Yeah, but I think, so that part is right. But then I think, Tim, that Rodman wanted to prove himself. So Rodman not only was not adhering to the rest of the team, slowing it down, he actually wanted to prove that even though he's been on a 48-hour bender with Carmen Electra and whoever else.
He still looks fantastic.
Yeah, fair play.
That's still fantastic.
When Rodman was partying, they showed him drinking what was like a cloudy, shots of something that was cloudy. Do you know what that was? Because I could only think it would be like Pernod But surely he's not drinking Pernod.
Pernod Cloudy. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It looked like cloudy lemonade. Like,
I don't know, when was this? This was about 90 what?
96, 97?
Yeah, mid to late 90s.
So we're talking about the time, aren't we, around the time when everything got a little bit trendy and people started drinking stupid stuff like Aftershock, and there's a lot of manufactured shots out there. It could have been anything.
To be honest, I don't know the late 90s Las Vegas party. Probably, I'll tell you
what it might have been, because I think it might have been something that came through in the late 90s, bit of a novelty, Goldschlager.
Goldschlager.
Might have been
Goldschlager.
That.
I do remember drinking Goldschlager.
I can't believe I'm saying this. The rumor on Goldschlager, or what I was told multiple times by multiple people who were very young at the time, is the gold flakes cut your insides, allowing you to absorb the alcohol more efficiently.
I definitely heard that rumor as well.
I think the reality is it just makes you have a much more expensive shit.
Yeah. Where do I have to log? I've not seen that for ages.
No. Maybe it was. Anyway, if you know what drink Dennis Robin was drinking in Vegas with Carmelo Electra, let us know at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. But rugby could be back. So as it stands, the Premiership still is having the intention to complete the Premiership season. And let's say, for argument's sake, it was able to start, if they want, need 4 to 6 weeks and they can't get going to the middle of July. Let's say latest start, sort of end of July, beginning of August. Let's say 1st of August. Then that means you could complete the season by autumn international time.
Yeah. Do you know what I think might happen? I think they might freeze the season and say, look, these are the places where everyone finished. We don't have enough time to complete it because the Saracens have got some championship matches to play. We'll do semis and we'll do the final, and that'll be it.
You can't have semis and final with the league table as it is.
Why? Oh, because you're so anti-sale.
No, you just can't. You can't do that. That would have. There's a massive. There'd be even more of an asterisk on your title than the people who put asterisk next to Saracens titles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's already got asterisks. So, I mean, we've already got rid of the best team in the competition by far. So you've got your first asterisk right there, and then you'd have the second asterisk because of COVID, and then your third asterisk because of the table. It was hardly a competition worth winning, to be fair.
Well, I think it's probably worth pointing out that I think the reason why they want the season completed is because there is broadcasting and sponsorship money on the table right now, which won't be there if it's not completed, I would assume.
Yeah, there'll certainly be reduced TV money if there's not a full suite of games. There has to be.
Yeah.
I just can't see how you play these games. And also have a pre-season. Well, you won't have a pre-season. But then some teams will be off whilst there is a playoff. Not a playoff, sorry. Yeah, a playoff and then a final. I take it the European Cup's finished.
It's not officially, but I don't think I've read that it is officially.
Almost certainly, surely.
Yeah, the French teams have definitely concluded their season. Yeah. And are focusing on starting again next season.
Yeah, so how can you play Europe? You can't, can you?
Well, no. I mean, you can do, but you'd be playing different seasons at the same time, potentially.
That's going to be a big chunk of change to someone. If they're worried about TV money, there's a whole competition there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, but we're at the knockout stage with that, so there's a lot of clubs that's irrelevant to, whereas there's 12 clubs that affects the Premiership, or 13 get the benefit of the broadcasting and sponsorship money, 13 shareholders in that. And so I think there's a lot more imperative in some of these clubs. This could be, I imagine the way that things are when you look at or you hear about the bank balances of many rugby clubs is that they'd already spent the money that they were due to be getting anyway.
Yeah, I think a lot of these clubs should go bankrupt, personally. If you can't pay your bills, if you can't pay your players, you have no place in being in rugby. And that's the way that this is going. If they have to play these games, it has to be so ridiculous now. I mean, if they could play tomorrow, I'd say, yeah, let's just get the season done. If you can do some midweek games, yeah, do it. But if we can't do it and they don't get the TV money, and that puts some clubs under. I would say that not so much the clubs, but the owners that own these clubs should not have been in the game in the first place.
I mean, this is truly exceptional times, and you can plan to run a rugby club under normal circumstances, but not achieve it at the moment, particularly if you've got owners who have other businesses in markets that are falling apart, like retail or hospitality markets.
Yeah, I would say, do you have that same opinion about, say, a pub? If a pub can't sell enough beer because it has to have 2 meters between every customer, therefore it has to have 1/5 of the amount of customers it normally can. If it can't survive on 1/5 of the traders, then it should just go bankrupt.
Let me think about that a second.
So my opinion,
yes, actually,
the pub market is dramatically different because it is so much easier to fold a pub, restart. I mean, just look at the pubs and restaurants in Chorlton. It's not, in my opinion, it's not as easy to get a rugby club with the fan base and the location and the ground and everyone else.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
To the top level.
I would say this about a pub, right? And this is why it's a fairly good analogy in some respects to a rugby club. If a pub goes under, there is a high chance that pub will either rebrand or just reopen with different ownership. And that's where we are with rugby. So if, for instance, Leicester Tigers went under tomorrow, Leicester Tigers as an institution and club would survive, but the business behind it would go under. And those are the businesses that I have a problem with at this point in time because of the cuts in player salaries. And because most of the Premiership, frankly, is owned by billionaires, not millionaires, billionaires. There's about 9 of them that I think can definitely afford it. Two or three, which are a bit iffy. But actually, these owners who own the clubs made a commitment to pay their players, and they should pay them.
Where they are very rich owners, which is a position that you've got in football. Now, I don't know the wealth and the backing of the rugby clubs, but the point is, if you've got a billionaire owning it, they should be stumping up some cash.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
It depends on the club and it depends who owns them, right? But if you actually look at who does own them, like Steve Lansdowne, and actually, in fairness to Steve Lansdowne, he has come out and said, he's been particularly vocal on the
salary cap,
the marquee players.
The marquee stuff. But if you just go through the list of owners, many of them are more than capable of paying, and they should do. And my problem is, if they don't pay, they shouldn't be allowed to keep the shares in that club. It's okay not to pay, but you can't keep the shares in that club, and you can't continue to benefit from the growth.
I would just say, I don't think you can detach the two. You're trying to say they shouldn't try and restart the league season, and if they can't afford it, then tough. But on the flip side, a lot of them might be looking at it going, oh yeah, we can just about scrape through as long as we get the TV money for this season.
Well, if they can't scrape through, they should be saying, either we're going to borrow to pay you, or we're going to sell some shares.
Forget about players. I'm talking about just like clubs more generally and restarting this particular season.
Yeah, because that is what we want to see. Like, I want to see a satisfactory conclusion to this season. And I then want to see us move on to next season. And now, if it is by satisfactory conclusion, it might not necessarily mean that we play all 9 games this season, all remaining 9 games and then the playoffs. It might be a curtailed version of that. And it might mean some changes to the overall number of games next season, both of which I would be broadly happy with, as long as it keeps the general integrity of the league and we get a conclusion and we get more rugby sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I think potentially what might happen is this league season gets concluded by mid to the end of October. Then there's a break while the autumn internationals happen. And then the league restarts in December, new season, without a European Cup for next season, so that it can finish by the time the Lions comes around.
Yeah, so in that scenario, you definitely need...
And less travelling involved in that as well.
Yeah, but in that scenario, you need even getting rid of the European Cup, you need a shortened season, I would assume.
It's just too much rugby, isn't there?
And the problem you'd have, you wouldn't have a break between, like, certainly for those players who are playing autumn internationals, you probably wouldn't have a break. So you've got to do something. And whether, I mean, one of the solutions that I don't actually hate, from a playing integrity side, not from a watching fan perspective, is you don't have a 2019-2020 season and a 2020-2021 season. You have a 2019-2021 season, and basically February next year you start, you finish off this season. But that does mean a full 12 months with no revenue. And that's from a sporting integrity perspective, I like that, but I know it can't work.
And as JB mentioned, Saracens might be due to play games in Europe, the Championship and the Premiership all at the same time.
Yes. Yeah, which, I mean, the whole thing is just a mess. And
I sort of think that this is one of those things where no one could have predicted COVID, so you can't blame anyone for that. But it's almost like leaving your house, isn't it? Driving to, say, I don't know, Bond Castle, but not bothering to pack a spare tire. Like, yeah, you can't be blamed for getting a puncture, but you can be blamed for not being adequately prepared for having a puncture. And I just think rugby's got itself in this situation where we've got too much rugby. You know, if something goes wrong, I mean, the awful events of, I'm just trying to think of when Foley died just before the Racing game. Everyone was scratching around thinking, where the hell do we fit in this game? Any small disruption in normal life is a huge disruption in rugby. We've got to get over this to make the competitions less fragile.
And maybe that is something that can happen, although I don't think it will, but maybe that's something that can happen with the global season. You can actually build in some resilience into the scheduling. But because rugby financially, as we've seen, is so fragile, they've got to get as much revenue as they can, wherever they can. And the way that they're addressing that problem at the moment is more games. And that's not always the best long-term option.
It's a tricky one, isn't it? It is tricky.
It is really tricky.
That point does bring us on to the... So SANZAAR and the Six Nations have agreed on some key principles that they want to see from the World Rugby Global Calendar. It doesn't tell you a huge amount. It's broadly where you'd expect them to be. It talks about alignment, aligning the player release windows and the playing windows for the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship. It talks about improved player welfare. It talks about basically more money, generating a competitive narrative that is marketable. And it does talk about restoring public faith in the core values of rugby. So
what? Sorry? Restoring public faith in the core values of rugby.
That's the statement.
What does that mean? Can someone tell me what that means?
What does it mean to you?
What are the core values?
What do you think the core values of rugby are?
I can answer for JB. JB's answer is bully your opponent.
Yes. Drink hard.
Yeah, drink hard. Yeah.
Five star hotels on the RFU's dime.
Yeah, I don't know what these. I hate this so much because I don't know what it means. It means so many different things to different people. Like, you could literally mold so-called rugby values into whatever narrative that you're trying to spin.
Yeah,
I mean, so okay.
it could be skills and looking after children.
It means equality for everyone except people with strongly held religious beliefs.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. It means be kind, but cut players' wages by 25%.
Yeah. Talk about welfare.
I mean, I just don't know.
Be kind, but demand a player never plays again when they do a bit of a stupid joke.
Yeah,
in a game.
That's brilliant. I just hate the idea. I don't even know, if I don't know what the core values are, how can you reinforce them? And by the way, what is your mechanism for reinforcing them? What are we going to do?
Create a new calendar.
Create a new calendar.
Yeah.
I just
So apart from item number 7 on the list, the rest of them seem sensible.
Yeah, the rest of them seem sensible. I'm actually quite in favour of them exploring this a bit more. Because everything's up for grabs now. You know, I said previously, I'm not wedded to when the Six Nations. Sorry, I've got awful hay fever. When the Six Nations is played, don't move it for the sake of moving it. Show me at least some evidence that this might work. But if it does work, well, why not?
Yeah, no, I'm definitely in favour of considering the calendar a bit better, because I think it's a bit of a mess at the moment.
Yeah,
and having the the Northern Hemisphere teams, like if you look at their calendar from a January, it's Premiership, Heineken, Six Nations, Premiership, Heineken, Summer Tour, a few weeks off in the summer, pre-season, Premiership, Heineken, Autumn Internationals, yeah. Premiership, Heineken. There's no coherent narrative throughout the season for what
it makes sense from one year to the next to have a certain window of time. Oh, that's the World Cup in 2023, but in 2021 that little window is a Lions Tour, or in 2022 that is an Autumn International window, or whatever the case may be. It makes sense to sort of standardize those. That's international rugby there. It could be a major world tournament. It can be a regional tournament or whatever.
Tim.
It's all right. Crack on.
I would say there's an element here of like swimming upstream is hard, isn't it? Swimming downstream is easy. Yes. Swimming upstream, which is to say that you can make all of these changes, all the changes that you want. And I guess the idea is to rebalance the financial realities of rugby to make sure there's more competitive tier two teams, yada, 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 yada. As this game grows, and it will grow, as it grows, it's going to get more and more financially concentrated in certain areas, mainly the Premiership. So for all the crying about the Premiership now, if you own a Premiership rugby club, you'll be sitting pretty in 10 years' time. I mean, it will grow, and the French clubs will grow. Those two leagues will be basically the centres of the universe for rugby, no matter what world rugby do, and no matter how much they try and rebalance the power now, just economies alone mean that those two competitions will eventually be the most powerful entities. I don't think there's much anyone can do about it.
So I would add to that Six Nations, and like you still got the All Blacks and South Africa as two huge entities that every time anyone plays them, It is a massive spectacle. Like New Zealand charge a huge fee to go and play a home nation team or a Northern Hemisphere team.
What happens if everyone decides they don't want to pay the fee to New Zealand? They are screwed, so they've got to be very careful about what they do.
Well, I think they'll see it as an investment. So the RFU might say, yeah, okay, it will cost us $10 million to get New Zealand over, but we're going to make $40 million on that spectacle with sponsorship, yeah, advertising, gate receipts.
Selling burgers and
pints. It's not always about that, is it? It's more about the politics, which is, if you set that precedence, who's going to ask for it next?
If it's very profitable, people will continue to.
Yeah, and I'm in favour of people getting their value.
Yeah, but then what if England then turn around and say, okay, fine, you've charged us a fee, but we know that we are the biggest economy. Not the biggest economy. England are the financial powerhouse of world rugby. If you want us over and the Lions, and you want all of our fans to fill up your stadium, say, we are going to charge you an astronomical
fee. Well, I mean, that's happening with the Lions now, isn't it? Is this the last tour before the deal will be restructured and renegotiated? Because as it stands, the Sanzar nations get it, just raking it through the nose. And really very little outlay for a Lions tour, and I think that's going to change.
Yeah, so I just think that it's a very dangerous precedent that the All Blacks set. Is it all? I mean, if it was just that one increase in isolation, nothing ever changed. You might say, yeah, fine. But everyone wants a piece of the pie. Why won't, you know, Wales might decide to demand X, Y, Z. I mean, England can demand it. Well, probably South Africa can.
Yeah, but in a way, you can't have it both ways, because either you would want World Rugby to come in and go, right, we're going to standardise this and we're going to redistribute and we're going to equalise things like match fees and you know, TV revenue and things like that. You either standardize it or you let people go and negotiate their own. You can't really be annoyed at both.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
You're getting angry about the core values of the game.
Oh yeah. No, core values.
Done that a bit.
Well, how about, you know, let's just quickly jump across. So I think what sort of broadly World Rugby and the Sanzar Nations and the Six Nations are talking constructively about a global standardized season, which will probably see the Six Nations move. That looks to be the smart money at the minute. How about the fact that the Pro 14 have got all of their CVC money for their agreed stake, which before this COVID situation kicked in?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Isn't that absolutely fascinating?
Mm. Yeah, and I was certain there would be a reduction in the value of the product before that deal went through.
Yeah, an amazing outcome for the Pro 14. And I guess that kind of highlights what I was saying about the Premiership clubs and the strength of rugby. I mean, we're talking about it being financially weak. I don't think it is because of the strength of the owners, and I don't think it is because if those owners go under, if those businesses go under, there'll be fresh owners to pick up the tab. And CVC seems to agree, because in the midst of a pandemic when no rugby can be played, they have not gone back on their deal. They have paid the full amount. Interestingly, it wasn't even the biggest deal that CVC concluded that day. They also bought an IT firm, I think. So, CVC have been very, very busy.
So they spent $120 million on 28% of... now, I assume, although I've not read this as confirmed, I assume it's the same structure of the deal that the Premiership is, where they're basically buying into the future TV revenue.
Commercial rights, yeah.
Yeah, commercial rights, rather than purely buying the clubs and the leagues. Because in the Pro 14, it's even more complicated than in the Premiership, because some of the home unions, IRFU, SRU, WRU, and I assume the Italian rugby union, own a stake in the teams that compete in the league.
Yeah.
So I assume it is the same structure. But it does, from this you can work out what the value of the Pro 14 is and the value of the Premiership is.
And will you enlighten us to those values, Philip?
I will. The Pro 14 is in totality, or certainly the commercial rights of the Pro 14, is valued at $428 million. And the Premiership is valued at $740 million.
Goodness me.
So,
$300. What is the amount if you take out Mark Dodson's annual wage at the Scottish Army?
It was a 3-year bonus.
Tim, if you take out Mark Dodson's annual wage, you also take out the brilliant rugby brain. So you're massively devaluing the product, the country, everything.
Yeah.
Quite right. I can imagine CVC probably looking at the current situation and, you know, venture capitalists and people that have got to the sort of position that the people running CVC will have got to are there because they spot opportunities rather than are fearful about situations like this. And I can imagine maybe they're looking at it going, no, we might be able to up our stake in these leagues. If there's clubs that are struggling and needing a little bit more equity, they might be able to go, all right, we could maybe up from 28% or whatever.
But this is the problem, right? This is the problem I've always had with...
Your phone's overheating.
Yeah, it is. this is the problem I've had with the CVC deal, and this is why they won't do that. Oh, sorry, they might do a version of that. But they'll never buy an actual club because they don't want any of the losses. They only want the income.
Yeah.
So when they bought the commercial rights, it just means that they're going to give you some money up front now in order to take your income later. And then when they get a bigger slice of pie, which they, you know, inform us they definitely will do, then, okay, yeah, the Premiership will get a slight,
So it would be like what CVC have done, it would be like a graduate coming out of university and some businessman spotting oh, I think you could be quite good. Tell you what, I'll give you a chunk of money now, but I'll take a slice of all your earnings throughout your whole career.
Yes.
It's actually very similar to the Nigel Ray Maroitoji commercial rights deal, which some accountants might say that that's overvalued. Some might say it's undervalued.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's probably undervalued.
It may well be, although Maroitoji right now is not playing any rugby whatsoever, so might not be that overvalued right now. Undervalued right now.
I've read a few things. Ollie Lawrence was in the rugby paper today saying he's in the best shape he's ever been in. There's a picture of Owen Farrell doing some kicking practice with his lad. The picture's quite funny because it actually looks like he's about to kick his kid. But there's a ball next to him just out of sight. But Owen Farrell looks absolutely, looks really impressive. He's got his top off and he's looking very, very... He's looking ripped, and ripped.
He's looking in like Johnny May ripped form.
Yeah.
It's very good. But that's so certain, like you'll know this well. There are certain players who, when you've had 8 weeks off and you get back to pre-season, certain players, after 5 minutes jogging around the pitch, are blowing, and you just know you've been on the beer, on the takeaways, not doing any training. And there's certain other players who get back and they've looked like they've never been away. They're even fitter than they were at the end of the season. They're in better shape. And I can't consider that Owen Farrell is anything other than the latter of those two camps.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, this might be a really unfair characterization of Owen Farrell. I can't imagine he has any much else to do. Like, I don't mean that in a nasty way, but he doesn't strike me as like Tom Wood. Tom Wood, we know, is a man of many, many hobbies and interests. I don't think I know of anything that Owen Farrell does away from the field. Do you?
No. No. Looking back, of all the stuff that I'm aware of, one of the few things I can actually recall seeing Owen Farrell do outside of rugby was that picture from a couple of years ago when he went on his own stag do, dressed as, I think it was an England goalkeeper, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With goalkeeper gloves taped onto his hands. That's about the only thing I know he does outside of rugby.
I know for a fact George Ford and his brother Joe are utter rugby nerds. And maybe that's what he is. Maybe that's what it takes to be as good as those boys are.
So it's not just in like the real world where, you know, guys like Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, the nerds rule the world. It's now even in elite sport, the nerds are ruling the world as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. With Jamal Ford Robinson as well.
He's an actual nerd. Geek. Is he a geek or a nerd?
Both. Same, same.
I'll have to confirm with him.
Yeah. I think he'd accept both tags.
I love his stuff. His videos are brilliant.
They are. Eddie Jones, sorry, are we sort of wrapped up on that one? That was the Pro 14, wasn't it? Yeah.
The Pro 14 included a segment about Owen Farrell.
Yeah.
Yeah, big segment.
Quite. So Eddie Jones has said he wants to have the free reign of the touchline during a match. He wants to be able to run up and down, like shouting like football coaches.
He's not allowed to. Or is he allowed to? I don't know. You got your technical one. You can only go to the technical area. Football coaches can only go to the technical area.
Yeah. I don't actually know.
So the only coach I've ever seen outside of the technical area, like really outside of it, was Pat Lam. And he wasn't even a coach then. He was a player. So if you remember the final, Munster-Northampton, you obviously remember that.
Obviously.
He was taken off for some reason. But instead of going off, he supported the lads in his full kit from about two feet away on the touchline as they either defended their try line or they were trying to score. So you can imagine if you're Munsterman, that must be very confusing because you've effectively got a 16th body within eyeshot. In the end, the officials had to tell him to move, that he couldn't be there. That's the only time I've seen anything even remotely like that.
And Eddie Jones is normally in the stands, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know what advantage he'd get from it.
What he said is he said in an ideal world, he'd spend the first half up in the stands, in the gods, you know, assessing patterns and tactics. And then in the second half, he'd spend it in the dugout trying to add something to the guys going on.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would say by the time the game is in the second half, your chance to influence it is somewhat limited. Outside your sub,
And plus, from what we've learnt with him recently, like, you know, Ben Young to be on the bench waiting to go on. Hey, Beanie, mate, do you want some sweets? Oh, what, you're going to have a sweet, you fatty? He just play mind games with them down there.
I hope so.
What else was there on your agenda, Phil? You did such a good little list of stuff that's gone on.
There's not an enormous amount happening this week. We had George Kruis and Alex Goode, apparently, both heading to Japan. Kruis is interesting because he's still targeting Lions next summer, 2021, and World Cup 2023. So Kruis is 30 years old. So in 3 years' time, he'd be 33, which is not unreasonable for a lock. He signed a 1+1 deal with Panasonic Wild Knights, which is not all that dissimilar to what a few other people have done, or certainly some of the Southern Hemisphere very talented players have done, where they've had sabbaticals, either playing or non-playing. Guys like Jerome Kano, Dan Carter, Ben Smith, of all, and Richie McCaw, I think, although his was non-playing, all in New Zealand, and like guys like Pocock and Bernard Foley in Australia have done those kind of sabbaticals. And in South Africa, it's actually fairly common to play Super Rugby for 6 months and then play top league in Japan for 3-4 months of the year to top up your rand. So, Kruis, it's interesting, and I wonder if we'll see more of those kind of deals where people do stints abroad. Like, look, Haskell did it. Haskell's one of the few English players who did it and then came back and then got back to England.
Like cricketers do, where they'll go, I'm going to go do this IPL for a few months and then I'll come back to a bit of county cricket before going on an international tour.
Yeah.
So, on Kruis himself, I mean, there's obviously two big name locks in the British Isles, Alan Wynne-Jones, Mauro Itoje. And I think they are the bigger names, but I don't think they're necessarily the bigger talents. I think George Kruis is right up there, and in some respects better than both in certain aspects of his game. He'll be missed. He'll be missed massively because I think he's essential to England. I think if there's a Lions tour tomorrow, he'll be essential to that.
I think James Ryan would get mentioned as well with those two.
Definitely James Ryan. In fact, I'd say James Ryan is another one in the level of Itoje and Alan Wynne. They're kind of the next level of fame. But I do think that in terms of talent, Kruis is, they're equal. And in some cases, they're better.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with any of that.
I was really glad to see what you said, Phil, that he's still targeting these big milestones, because it would be such a shame if you had to choose between, right, well, I'm going to go and try something else, and that means I've just got to wash my hands of all international ambition, because as we've pointed out, he's an incredible player, and this particular time right now is such a state of flux for the whole game and the whole world that, you know, that wouldn't be fair on people that have to make decisions like this. So, yeah, I hope it's not the last time we've seen him in an England jersey, despite the fact he's going to Japan. And he's going to be in a lock pairing with Sam Whitelock.
Yeah.
Oh, no, is he not replacing Sam Whitelock?
No, I think...
No, I think he's going to be with him.
Same team.
Pocock in the same team. Hadley Parks in the same team.
I thought Hadley Parks... I need to check this, but I thought Hadley Parks and Kruis come over at the same time to replace Whitelock and somebody else who leave.
So Whitelock, I think, will be playing Super Rugby whenever that does start again. But I think he'll be... So right now, we should be towards the business end of Super Rugby. So when later in this year, when Super Rugby would end, I think they'll be playing on the same team together. There's not many club sides other than, I guess, Saracens when Kruis and Itoje were playing can boast a second row pairing of that calibre.
So here's a thought for you. A few years ago, I think everyone would say that England were absolutely blessed with locks. And to a degree they are, but you were talking about Launchbury, Atwood.
Sort Laws.
Of, Laws, of course. Now, Laws is getting on a bit. Itoje is in his prime. Cruising's pro, he's going. Who is the next logical replace? Who's the next logical replacement for Cruz?
Johnny Hill?
I like Johnny Hill, but...
It doesn't sound right, does it? It doesn't sound like he's the next cab off the rank.
No, he's been involved in the England squads, in and around them. I mean, Charlie Ewells, not for me.
Not for me.
Ezekwe, he's been involved.
Yeah, Ezekwe involved for about 25 minutes.
Matt Poffin.
Dave Ribbons.
Ribbons is good. Is he not South African, though?
Born in South Africa, English qualified,
is
I believe.
Moon they were looking at in Northampton?
Alex Moon, that's another one who's been involved.
Yeah. I'm just looking at who was in the last. Yeah, Alex Moon. So the last Six Nations squad were those guys we just mentioned. Itoje, Laws, Launchbury, Cruis, Ewells and Moon. Why you need six second rows? I guess Itoje and Laws both play six.
But they all sort of aged at the same. So if you rewind, maybe 3 years ago, Cruz could go. But I don't think he can, though. Or it's going to be a lot harder.
There'll be other guys coming through, but like the Kapoku boys from Saracens.
Who re-signed today?
Yes. Was it Joel? One of them.
Definitely one of them.
Confirmed as re-signed. But yeah, you're right. There's not... Of the guys coming through, there's not a James Ryan type guy coming through that I'm aware of.
No, there's not.
It's a good point.
Well,
it's a fair point. Wasps have signed a lock. I can't remember his name, but he basically said, I'm coming to... he signed from France, somewhere in France. He was being coached by Joel Abbe. So where was he? I can't remember. Anyway, but he said, I'm coming to get a starting spot and to challenge Joe Launchbury at every level. I can't remember the guy's name. Mark, no. Anyway, I'll try and remember that. But another, well, not lock, but another forward that's, well...
Could play. Definitely could play lock.
Definitely could play lock. Peter Steph Detoy. He is, he's now staying with the team that he just resigned from. Was this just a ploy to get the cash he's worth without... I don't know. It's weird. What's going on?
It's certainly a rebuttal of him accepting a pay cut. Because there are players... Some players have more power than others. It is a meritocracy, after all.
I'm surprised he doesn't have more power. He's amazing.
Well, he clearly does have quite a lot of power because he got asked to fall in line with everyone else. And it looks like he said no and got away with it.
So it wasn't a case of storming out of a party, but then having to come back because you left your car keys.
Well, that's not my read of it. It's possible. But I would have thought even in this cash-strapped time that if Peter Steph Detoy's signature was available, there would have been a number of bidders who would have gone.
Crikey, yes. Crikey.
Yeah.
Any
club in the Premiership or in France.
I think he would love the Northwest. I do. I just think it's...
He'd love the exchange rate of the rand to the pound.
The Northwest pound.
I'd love that.
He'd fit in very well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
So is this weekend coming, the weekend when we've got the inter-regional or inter-New Zealand games starting?
Ah, good question. It's got a name, hasn't it? Ataria or something like that. I can't remember what it's called. How am I going to find out when those games are on? It's been so long since I've looked up a rugby fixture, I've almost forgotten how to do it.
What was the test? Oh, there was a name for the test that Bowden Barrett turned up at his new club and just the Blues and just absolutely nailed.
It was the Bronco test.
Bronco. I'm going to... Right, you find out the fixtures. I'm going to find out what Bronco is.
I know this because we do it at Talk H. I mean, obviously, I don't do it, but some lads in Talk H do this.
What is it, the Bronco test?
Some form of running.
Oh, cheers. the Bronco test is a measurement of aerobic endurance. Players run shuttles of 20 metres, 40 metres and 60 metres five times over as quickly as possible. So you go 20, 40, 60... 20, 40, 60, 20, 40, 60, five times.
Ooh.
After having, Bowden Barrett sets a fitness record in his first training session. I mean...
Wow.
I mean, he'll know a load of the top names anyway, but that is like proper... We were talking about, you know, George Ford and Owen Farrell and great rugby players being nerds. That is a kind of noisy thing to do. Turn up, hi, new teammates. I'm going to rinse you all on my first day.
Oh, training over the summer? No, I've been kicking back with a few beers.
Exactly. What, these old things?
It's a bit like a bleep test, but it's not the same.
Out and back, out and back, out and back, lots of that.
Yeah. Why don't you run a distance?
It's because the change of direction takes it out of your legs.
Yeah, and you never run 5K when you're playing rugby. You might run 5K in total over 80 minutes, but you never run it in 20 minutes.
Right, so have a guess. Do you know Bowden Barrett's time, JB?
I have no idea what's a good time.
Do you know it, Phil?
I don't know.
Okay, so it is 20 metres, 40 metres, 60 metres, five times over.
Has he got the same sort of time as that girl on Twitter who ran 5K in 12 minutes?
Oh, yeah. Using the Strava. And
pause.
Pause. Feature.
Yeah, Ross Barkley did that.
Barkley did his 5K.
15 minute 5K, but it was pausing it every, he might have been 400 or 80.
What he was actually doing was shuttles. He did 5 kilometres in total, but he did them in shuttle sprints.
But
only counted the active time. Yeah, because Strava takes the active time. So when you're still recovering, it'll take that out of the time and it'll give you your active time. So Ross Barkley did 5 kilometres in sprints in about an hour and a half, but his 5K time was
15 minutes. So I have seen there's quite a good Twitter handle called Strava Wankers.
Yes, I saw that. That's where I saw it.
That's quite good fun. And they were doing something to basically Ross Barkley a 5K as fast as you possibly can. So just do 100 meter sprints, absolutely flat out, down a big hill, and continue that and get like an 8 minute 5K time.
How would you best do that?
It would be flat out. So you need to be running a distance where you can go absolutely flat out for that distance and then stop and have 2 minute rest. So do 100 meters and then a 2 minute rest.
But or 3 minute rest as you walk back up the really steep hill, you've just pegged it.
Yeah,
down.
Exactly.
But what's the gradient? What is the best gradient for that? Because there is a gradient where it's too steep to run.
Yes. I guess if you were if you're skydiving, you're going pretty fast, aren't you?
Yeah. So I guess it's got to be a grassy hill, because if you want top speed, you don't want to be going down like a concrete road on a decline.
Gravel burns.
Oh God, no.
Well, I don't know. I must have this wrong, exactly what it is, but Bowden Barrett, the record time he got was 4 minutes and 20 or something like that. So I don't know how many.
So this says, runs from a start. So 1,200 meter shuttle test involved running to and from a start line. So you're running backwards and forwards. So that's why it's 1,200 meters, not 600 meters. So you run 20, then back.
Oh, of course.
40, then back. 60, then back. Five times without a break.
Yeah.
Bronco test. So that is 1,200 meters. Ah, right.
Three laps of an athletics track, but no momentum and having to stop and change direction.
Yeah, because the stop and start does kill you. So I did my opening kilometre of my 5K in 3:31, which obviously I can do faster than that if I do it flat out, but to then continue going, mind you, I can't do it that much faster than that, just doing it flat out, in all honesty. So I'd say, so this is 50% longer than that, and you've got stops in. Oh,
yeah, that's disgusting.
Sorry, it's 20% longer than that, and you've got stops in. I don't know.
You've
always... four and a half to 5 minutes, something like that. Four minute 40.
Yeah, he did it in 4:20.
20, bloody hell.
Yeah.
So I don't know where the name Bronco is from. I'm going to assume it's a rugby league thing.
Yeah.
I assume it's going to be Broncos from Australia somewhere.
That's yeah.
But have you ever done Malcolm's?
No. What's Malcolm?
I thought you would have, Tim. We did it at Brook Park all the time, which is on your chest from the halfway line, up to the 10-metre line, down on your chest.
Oh, yeah.
Back over the halfway line to the other 10-metre, on your chest, up.
Yeah, 22, try line. Yeah.
22. No. It's more compact than that.
Oh, okay.
So it's halfway. So chest up, hot from halfway.
Yeah.
10-metre chest up, down. So you're the 10-metre up, down, and then you finish back on the halfway.
But with your chest touching the ground every time.
Yeah, except for when you run through. And that is Malcolm. I can't remember what his surname is, but he was a fitness coach from rugby league, and that's where Malcolm's come from.
We used to do one with a guy called Mark Henry, who was he's Canberra.
What, the wrestler?
Not the wrestler.
What, the wide receiver for the
former Welsh? Was he World's Strongest Man at one point? Or he had the deadlift world record or something.
Different Mark Henry, who was
not the receiver for the Bengals, no.
Not the receiver for the Bengals. He played for Canberra Raiders. He then played for Salford Reds. And he was, at one stage, the Cowboys' strength and conditioning coach. Ooh. But he did a stint with us for a season. And he did... So it was 20-metre returns, flat out. But the worst thing about it was you buddied up, and he would bring 20 stopwatches, and your partner would time you for every single one. And so it was timing your drop off. So if your first 20-metre return was, I can't remember the times now, if it was 5.1 seconds, you had to get 5.1 seconds 10 times in a row. Or like but he would gauge your fitness by how much you were dropping off. So some people go from 5.1, 5.1, 5.2, 5.3, 5.3, 5.3, 5.4, and like a very slow gradual drop off. But some people do the first five, 5.1, 5.2, and then the last five at like 6.5, 6.6. And then you know you're in for a bit of extra fitness.
Did some people go deliberately slow on the first one?
But then you've still got the competition. Yep. Because if you're an outside back, you want to be the fastest outside back. So there's no, like the way it was done, there was no hiding place. Like not even on a single one. It was just brutal, but it was a really good way of pushing everyone. Mm.
God, I hate preseason.
One of my favorite times of year, partly because I was never injured during preseason.
I could. Yeah. I was tempted to do a Murph this weekend. I think I'm going to do one this week. It's a CrossFit workout, but what's that? 1 mile run, followed by 100 pull-ups, 200 press-ups, 300 lunges, or something like that.
300 bodyweight squats.
Bodyweight squats. Then a mile run to finish.
So I've done this a few times. So I did it. So the first couple of times I did it, I did, I think, just under an hour. But that was doing everything sequentially. As in
as in not starting the press-ups until you've done 100 pull-ups.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it is way harder doing that.
Yeah, it's way harder.
I did it the week before lockdown, actually, coincidentally.
How else would you do it?
You could do like 10 pull-ups, 20 press-ups, 30 squats and do it like that.
Yeah, or do it...
cycles until you've done them all.
Yeah, or do it however you want. You can
however you want. If you just write, as soon as you can't do any more pull-ups, you can have a breather. You could do all 300 squats in the middle to give your upper body a bit of a breather, however you want to do it.
Yeah, and I can't remember the exact thing. It was about 44 minutes doing it like that, I think.
44 minutes?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. It was about 40. I'll have the time somewhere.
So I've been doing 100 pull-ups a day, right? But
humble brag.
Yeah, but every time I come off the bar, I've got to do seven press-ups, right? So if you come up off the bar, if you do one, you got to do 100 lots of seven. You got to do basically 700 press-ups. So that's how I measure how well I'm doing, by the amount of press-ups that I'm doing. So today I did 100 pull-ups and about 180 press-ups.
Yeah, that reminds me of a workout I did at the CrossFit place we used to go to, JB, where I think the workout was as simple as 100 pull-ups. Or no, it was always like a bar hang, accumulate a total of 15 minutes bar hang or 20 minutes bar hang, whatever it is. But every time you drop down, you have to run 400 meters. So you're sort of I can't remember exactly what it was. It might have been pull-ups. I might have done both, but it was that mind game you play where you're like, oh my God, I'm so dead.
Yeah.
I don't want to run again. and I remember getting to 1 second before, it was a bar hang one, and I got to 1 second before I would have been finished, and my fingers, and I just went off, and I had to do a whole another 400 meters before I could come back and do my 1 second bar hang.
Did anyone watch, God, this is going back years, did anyone watch, there was a reality TV show on ITV 20 years ago called, I think it was called Survivor or something like that, where they were on a desert island.
Yeah.
And one of the challenges was hanging from a bar. And there was a guy who was like an ex-Marine or ex-RAF type guy who like comfortably had it. He had to hang for 2 minutes and he wins the challenge. And he's so comfortable that with about 30 seconds to go, he starts showboating and doing some chin-ups. And after doing like 5 chin-ups, he immediately realizes, oh my God, what have I done? I've just burnt my last energy. And with 2 seconds to go, drops off, falls into the ocean and fails the task for his team.
Hubris.
Yeah, exactly. My time for Murph a couple of months ago was 44 minutes, 10 seconds.
That's good going.
Which was doing, and it was in blocks of 10.
Is that was that strict pull-ups or the cheat CrossFit pull-ups?
I don't do kipping pull-ups or anything.
They're not pull-ups really, are they?
Yeah, I do them, but I wasn't wearing a weighted vest for it, but I was doing strict pull-ups. Although I actually did that in the gym, so I was doing lateral, neutral grip rather than either.
Front or back?
Yeah, which I find that slightly easier, so maybe I'm cheating because of that. But yeah, 44-10. A bit of go.
Look at all this toxic masculinity going on this podcast right now.
Right, I'm going to bring this back to it because I've got a very, very short quiz.
Oh, yes. Go on.
What?
Yeah, very short. Very short indeed. It's one question. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you names of rugby players and you've got to tell me what they have in common, right?
Okay.
And the first person to get it wins. I'll just carry on reading them until he gets what it is. Okay. Rob Andrew.
People that have been in management at the RFU.
Right, and if you guess and you get it wrong, you can't go until the other guy.
Oh, okay, fine. Okay, fine. Okay.
So, Rob Andrew. Ross Batty. Callum Clark. Rory Clegg.
Newcastle Falcons players.
Oh, are they all Newcastle Falcons players? They might be, but that is
Colin
not.
Clark might not.
But that is not. That's not.
I know.
Well, you're not saying things, so shut up. Carl Dixon. Lee Dixon.
I know. Fuck.
Alex Gray.
Okay, they've all. Hold on.
Be careful, because I think he knows.
Go on.
Ben Jones. Howard Marshall. No? Alex Tate. Matthew Tate. Rory Underwood.
Come on, Tim.
Tony Underwood.
Can I go now?
Tim Visser.
What?
Right, I'm going to guess.
God.
These are people, pupils who attended Barnard Castle
School. Yes.
That is correct. Well done. And the missing Toby Flood, I'm sure he was a Barnard Castle boy.
No, he wasn't. He went to, is it King David's? Because I know the chap who played scrum half for him, who is a dreadful, dreadful passer of the ball. One of the is why Toby Flood is such a good player, because he had the worst service from his schoolboy number nine.
So, does anyone know why I'm familiar with Barnard Castle?
You were up there at that. You lived up in Richmond, didn't you?
Are you aware of that, Tim?
Oh yeah, I know. You got offered a job in Richmond. Thought, oh, I'll have that. Saturday afternoons by the river, stroll to Twickenham for the big matches, and
yeah,
you didn't realise it was Richmond in North Yorkshire.
Yeah, I literally sat in the boardroom. I accepted a promotion, and my boss said, "Yep, we've got an office in Richmond." I was like, "Yeah, I mean, obviously. Why wouldn't I?" Shook hands on the deal, and as we stood up, he was right. Meet me tomorrow at 7 a.m. We'll be driving to Yorkshire. I think, what the hell are we going to Yorkshire for? And in the car, it dawned on me, we were on the motorway on the M62 when I realised he was going to Richmond, North Yorkshire. And I spent 6 months there. No, less than that. I arrived there in April, and I left my job there in, say, September. Maybe even earlier than that, actually. So I couldn't even play rugby. I wanted to play for Darlington. So I think I went to one Darlington game where they had the last ever game against Oral, the old Oral before it became defunct. So that was a little bit historic. That was the only socialising I did. I lived above a stable. I had no friends. I there was nowhere to make any friends. The only places that I could go at night, sometimes I'd go to RAF Leeming to watch aeroplanes take off. Other times I'd spend an hour in Tesco walking around aimlessly. There was nothing to do in Richmond. And the worst part about it was, I was dropped off there. Like, what were you boys doing when you were 22?
Studying, working, playing rugby.
I was doing post-grad studying in Bath.
Yeah. So when I was 22, I'd been promoted from basically an administration job by an absolute buffoon. My old boss was an utter buffoon. Not surprisingly, he ended up in St. James's Place. this buffoon, right, decided to send me without any experience whatsoever and put me in office, age 22, in charge of an administrator and a secretary. I'd never made a sales call in my life. Put me in a room full of folders and said, phone every one of these and try and sell them financial products. I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then I was opening up old files, right? This is the interesting bit. Whoever was working where I was working before I was working with footballers, and they were raising money and setting up mortgages effectively to pay off gambling debts.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had a load of footballers' files just to pay off gambling debts.
Wow.
Yeah. So unsurprisingly, I lasted about 4 weeks there before the boss said, how come you as an administrator, 22-year-old administrator, can't manage these 2 40-year-old women and haven't made me a load of money yet? Oh, I can't think of it.
And then you came back to Manchester.
And I came back to Manchester.
And the rest is history.
I should have been by the river. It's my own stupid fault.
Wow. And that's near Barnard Castle, then, I take it.
Sorry, and that's the reason. And that's the other thing I do. RAF Leeming, Tesco, or Barnard Castle for a walk.
by the river, making sure not to bump into anyone.
Yeah, and the only other place I could really go was... you'll have heard about it. Yarm.
I've been drinking around Yarm.
Well, I couldn't even go drinking because I wasn't earning enough to afford the taxi home, and it was bloody miles away. So I had to drive there, have a pint, and drive back alone.
You're very good to have one pint and drive on the roads up there.
Oh, crikey. Not for me, mate. Not for me. So yeah, that is why I'm familiar with the town of Barnard Castle. So
I'll tell you what, the PR for Barnard Castle, their tourism board must be absolutely loving it this weekend.
I want to read the reviews for Barnard Castle, because I bet there are some cracking reviews after this weekend. I bet it's been hammered.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. That's a great shout.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about Barnard Castle now, so I think, unless anyone's got any more rugby stuff to say, we should wrap this up.
No more any other business from me.
Just to mention the next week's homework, I guess.
Oh yeah, yeah. We've had a week off homework. We've had a bit of a lazy week this week, haven't we? But that's fine.
Yeah, other things to concentrate on.
Yeah, you know, like being outraged on Twitter. But yes, so this is going to be a tough one for a lot of us, I think. Well, certainly for me and Phil.
Yeah.
Less so for JB. So the game we are going to look at next week, which we're asking you to watch for your homework and then we'll review next week, is the 2015 World Cup match between England and Wales. The famous Chris Robshaw quote, "We always back ourselves at home" match.
Oh, Chris.
We are going to have a field day with this.
Oh.
An absolute field day.
So there is a full video of it on YouTube, which I will post in a link on our Twitter account. So twitter.com/... Rugby podcast. Go and have a look. I'll make sure the link is there. You've got a week to watch it. And yeah, there's so much in this game. There's Sam Burgess. Was he really at fault? Was he the scapegoat? Was he a legitimate scapegoat that he became? Did Stuart Lancaster get the tactics really that wrong?
Yes.
Should England have kicked for the posts or gone for the corner at the end?
So many great stories. So many. I mean, the amount of stories linked to this game is just incredible. The amount of performances. It's a great game. It is a great game. Just the bad fortune of England.
Well, was it bad fortune or was it ineptitude? I guess we can
to lose against two scrum halves, one on the wing, is, I don't know. I don't know what that is. I don't know. I can't wait to watch this. I'm actually excited.
I've never rewatched it. I couldn't bring myself to rewatch it.
Same.
I was absolutely blind drunk when I watched it as well. So I've still got very hazy memories of it.
You might want to build some sort of YouTube playlist, like, for instance, the Always Back Ourselves at Home video.
Yeah, the advert.
You might want to review the advert. You might want to look at all of Sam Burgess's games.
Paloma Faith's song, World in Union.
Yeah. I don't forget the amazing performance that they've done bigger.
I can't remember anything. I couldn't have even told you if it was Dan Biggar playing at 10.
So I've got to tell this as well. I didn't actually see Wales go ahead. I was watching it at Broughton Park and I was so dejected by the score that I packed up and left. And it was like, oh, where are you going? Got home, turned on the TV and Wales were winning.
Did you then get a taxi back to Broughton Park?
Broughton Park, actually. Hi, guys. I did.
Me again.
I will confess that I actually quite enjoyed it when in the football World Cups and European Championships, I got to a point where England were that, it was, I used to care so little, I'd actually quite enjoy England losing.
Oh, Tim.
I know that's a shameful thing to say, but I found it quite funny when England lost to Iceland. I thought that was really funny. But this, like, on the flip side of the coin, this game made me understand how hugely passionate England football fans must have felt at every major tournament for the last 40 odd years, because this was so painful.
It was awful, wasn't it? At home.
Was it as painful as the Australia game, though?
I was at the Australia game. I mean, that the Australia game was just...
We got rinsed in that one, didn't we?
It didn't fire a shot, England. It was just awful. It was a terrible game, that.
I want to say that I'm going to call it the Foley try. I know it's Curtly Beale, but the way they picked them so close, and like in the first, 5 minutes or something, Beale, Foley, and someone else, a lovely little kind of round the corner move, bam, bam, bang, and then
was it Adam Ashley Cooper?
Could well have been. Anyway, yeah. All of this and more to come.
Yeah, all I remember is I had to host the Manchester Fan Zone. in town, which, I mean, Manchester, as you know, is a city that does not care for rugby particularly anyway. But when England are doing badly and I have to try and make a whole day's worth of content out of a ghost town of a fan village, that was like pulling teeth. That's all I know. Anyway, yes, we'll do that. So we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Go and find that. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. You know Phil. He's lurking in the swamp. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.